After a tough week for him, the president gets out of Washington. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with a global perspective on business and the economy. It is a tradition with U.S. presidents in their last 2 years in office, especially after a drubbing of their party in midterm elections. President Obama is pivoting to foreign affairs. He heads to Asia this weekend for a trip that will last about a week. First stop, China. He'll also visit a G20 summit in Australia, Nova Sappho reports.
Among President Obama's top priorities this time around is a 12-country free trade agreement authored by the U.S. and Japan.
There are a lot of very contentious issues.
Derek Scissors is an Asia scholar at the American Enterprise Institute.
Can American farm goods freely enter the Japanese market? The Japanese resisted this for years. Can Japanese autos freely enter the American market? The United States has resisted.
Scissors says resolving those issues would be a big accomplishment during this trip. And for a president who's facing a tough road domestically, it makes sense to focus on foreign policy. That's according to Russell Riley. He's a presidential historian at the University of Virginia.
Towards the end of the term, when presidents are thinking about legacies, they do become focused on places abroad where they feel like they can make a difference.
The timing may work out for the president, as a recovering economy offers the U.S. a renewed leadership role in global trade. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
The man one might consider the finance minister for New York City wants to bring a new kind of direct democracy to corporations. The city's controller, Scott Stringer, is teaming up with institutional investors to lobby companies to allow shareholders to nominate directors for election to the boards. Shareholders, it's worth reminding ourselves, are owners of the companies. But under this proposal, not just any shareholder can say, I think Jack or Peggy should be considered for the board. The investors will have to hold more than 3% of the company's stock for more than 3 years to qualify. All this is about making boards more accountable, Tracy Samuelson reports.
Comptroller Scott Stringer knows this is going to be an uphill battle. He's got the support of some of the country's biggest, most influential public pension funds. But even so, David Nadler, a principal at Nadler Advisory Services, thinks companies will resist.
The costs and the time and the distraction of potentially dealing with contested board elections, I think, is not good for the enterprise.
Nadler consults with boards and executives on issues like this and says, on the whole, companies have become more responsive to their shareholders in recent years, so he doesn't think these changes will be worth the hassle they'd cause. Stringer disagrees.
The old boys network is still in place. You know, a friend of a friend of a friend is serving on these corporate boards, but we need certain expertise. We need more diversity. If you put more women and people of color on boards, studies show that the company does better.
If companies don't agree to Stringer's changes, shareholders would have to vote to approve his proposal next year. Even then, companies wouldn't have to adopt it. But Stringer says he and his pension fund allies will just keep coming back. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
By the way, I'm aware of the debate over saying it controller or comptroller. I chose the one I thought would impress you the most. Now let's do the numbers. The 100-share index in London is up 0.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures have moved very little as market participants await the big U.S. employment and unemployment reports for October. Those are due in just over an hour and a half. In Spain, the government of Catalonia has scheduled a referendum on Sunday on independence. Two questions. Do you want Catalonia to become a state? And if so, do you want that state to be independent? The Spanish central government has tried to block that ballot, arguing it's illegal. The BBC's Guy Hedgeco reports from Barcelona.
The referendum has been organized by the nationalist regional government in Catalonia. It argues that most Catalans, such as those singing the regional anthem at this pro-independence demonstration, want the right to decide what their future relationship with Spain will be. However, in September, the Spanish government, headed by Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy, blocked the referendum originally planned for this Sunday by appealing to Spain's highest court over its legality. The leader of Catalonia, Artur Mas, responded by announcing another alternative referendum for the same day with the same questions. It appears that Mr. Mas and many others are going to ignore the Spanish state's legal obstacles. Ramon Piqué is one of those who are planning to disobey the Constitutional Court. He's a volunteer helping to organise Sunday's vote.
I've always wanted independence since I was a kid. I never felt that I'm Spanish, I'm just Catalan. The aggression is of the Spanish government is so strong in every field. I mean, in culture fields, in economical fields especially. We're being denied the resources we need to develop as a country.
But not all Catalans want independence. Polls show that around half of the region's 7.5 million inhabitants would vote in favour of breaking away from Spain. Although on Sunday, most of those who oppose independence are expected to stay away.
It's illegal, it's undemocratic, there are a lot of citizens against this process.
Susana Beltran is vice president of Catalan Civic Society, an organisation that's strongly opposed to independence.
We are very worried because not all Catalans think the same. There are a lot of Catalans, not all Catalans are nationalists. But we have a big problem between Catalan citizens. It's a shame.
The clock is still ticking down to Sunday's referendum, and the tensions between Spain and Catalonia show no signs of easing.
The BBC's Guy Hedgeco reporting from Barcelona. We are monitoring volatility in the Russian currency, especially this morning. In the last week, the ruble's fallen 8.2% against the dollar amid Western sanctions over Ukraine, low oil prices, and Russia's generally weak economy. It can cost a fortune to curb movements of a currency, and Russia's been forced to let the ruble float more freely in recent days. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.